and welcome to Monocle 24's The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. I'm Andrew Tuck. Coming up on today's programme.
First and foremost, I think you've got to have the safe infrastructure there, because all these other things that you do are not going to bear much fruit if at the end of the day, the majority of people don't feel safe enough cycling.
Is Europe en route to a cycling revolution? This week, we cast our eyes across the continent to see some of the radical moves cities are making in order to embrace active transport and support those who get around on two wheels rather than four. We head to the French capital to assess what a 100% cycling city really is and how they plan to get there, unpack the European Commission's new mobility framework and what it means for cyclists across the region, and we visit the master of it all, Copenhagen, and the annual index that ranks the best cities for getting around on a bike. That's all coming up over the next 30 minutes, right here on The Urbanist with me, Andrew Tuck. In the past few years, and accelerated by temporary measures introduced due to the pandemic, many cities around the world have been experiencing something of a cycling revolution. European cities are no different, with mayors from Paris to Milan rolling out big plans that look to support those who get around by bike. But Europe may have a secret weapon that could see them pull ahead in the global race for cycle-friendly cities. The European Commission's new urban mobility framework, part of the wider efficient and green mobility package, puts particular emphasis on walking and cycling and promises to provide guidance on quality infrastructure for vulnerable road users. Well, I'm joined now by Jill Warren, CEO of the European Cyclists Federation. The ECF is a Brussels-based NGO that promotes cycling as a sustainable and healthy means of transport and leisure. Well, Jill, thanks for joining us today. When you look across Europe, are we beginning to see more and more cities starting to promote real radical and ambitious plans for supporting cyclists?
They're never as ambitious as we would like them to be when we look at the whole picture. There's bright spots here and there, which we welcome and which are absolutely great, but there could be a lot more. But we really think that what we've seen come out of the Commission recently may help accelerate these developments further and give more cities the impetus and courage to go further with their plans for cycling and active mobility.
And tell me, without naming names, when you look across the continent, the places that are maybe a little bit slower to be on the uptake, is that because they still have an entrenched car culture that has been slower to get rid of? Or maybe there just isn't the funds to put in place the ambitious things you need to do to try and get your whole city cyclable? Where are the areas that hold people back, do you think?
That's a very good question. I don't think it's as simple as, do they have an entrenched car culture or not? The contrast between Paris and Germany are very good examples. So France has had a very strong national cycling strategy with very clear targets for modal shift to more cycling. And standout cities like Paris have really embraced this and made huge strides in the past few years. And so even though it's a traditional car country, we've seen huge progress in France. France also, for example, has introduced a scheme where if you scrap a polluting motorized vehicle, you can also apply the premium or the incentive to the purchase of an e-bike. Whereas in Germany, that's something advocates have been calling for quite a long time, and they've not gone for that. So if there's going to be any premiums for buying electric vehicles, they're going to apply to electric vehicles and not to electric bicycles, for example. So Germany definitely lags behind in terms of actual action on encouraging more cycling. So that's just one contrast I can point to. I think that the pandemic was a very important catalyst for developments in more cycling infrastructure and accelerating things. But I think the cities that were able to capitalize on that most were the ones that already had plans in place or plans in the drawer and were able to act on them that much more quickly.
I guess that for many of the cities that have been most successful at changing the culture around cycling, it's because they have bike hire schemes, they have free bike ride systems, all sorts of things in place. Is that something that you're also hoping is picked up more by cities around Europe?
I think first and foremost, we need to make sure that people feel very safe, riding bikes, because that's the number one barrier for people not cycling more or not taking up cycling in the first place, is not feeling safe doing so. If you want more children to cycle to school, you've got to have programs and things in place that help encourage that. I mean, first and foremost, I think you've got to have the safe infrastructure there, because all these other things that you do are not going to bear much fruit if at the end of the day, the majority of people don't feel safe enough cycling. So for us, it's very important to lobby for that safe and protected cycling infrastructure that makes cycling the safe activity that it should be. So that's a huge focus. And then it's that prioritization of cycling and active mobility within the mobility mix for all sorts of reasons. And that's something we were particularly delighted with in the urban mobility package, the urban mobility framework that came out as part of the efficient and green mobility package.
Tell us about the framework. So this is a document that will influence what happens all across Europe in many ways and set some ambitions. What's actually within that framework?
So the urban mobility framework is part of the European Commission's efficient and green mobility package, which has revised legislative proposals on the Trans-European Transport Network, on the Intelligent Transport Systems Directive, and this communication on the urban mobility framework, which relates to both of those. I think the most significant thing is that it truly prioritizes active mobility. So, you know, it states in there verbatim, a clear priority should be placed at national and local level on the development of public transport, walking and cycling, as well as connected shared mobility services. And this is the first time ever that the European Commission has prioritized investment in these modes as the backbone of urban mobility. I mean, that's huge.
And tell me, the ambitions there are environmental, their health. What's the bedrock of that call to action?
I think the primary motivation is the environment. So it's the very ambitious climate goals that the European Commission has set, which were kicked off by the European Green Deal, which was announced very early in the tenure of the current Commission President, Ursula von der Leyen. And there's been a whole raft of policy initiatives coming off the back of that. And this is a further iteration, I think, of those things that are geared towards the very huge reductions in CO2 emissions that need to happen for the continent to become climate neutral and to avoid a catastrophe, frankly.
Now, tell us about some of the cities that are picking up these ideas and in a European context doing well. We saw Milan doing a huge amount of work, especially during the pandemic, to put in place a much broader cycling culture. Is that a city that you look to and think, yes, they're getting lots of things right?
Yeah, I think what's very exciting about an example like Milan is when we look at Southern Europe, like Italy, Spain, Portugal, these countries that are not traditional everyday cycling countries, to see them making very big and bold moves, I think is huge. It really shows that they've reached a tipping point and are ready for change in favor of this more sustainable and active mobility. What I think it says too, because we were hearing very big announcements during the pandemic, and if you look at the whole map of where exciting things were happening in terms of experimental temporary infrastructure and very quick moves to create more space, we saw that countries that are more likely to try things out were clustered in Southern Europe, you know, whereas maybe the more conservative countries like Germany or Scandinavia, we saw very few examples of this temporary infrastructure because they are more risk averse and less open to kind of experimenting in that way. I think that's an interesting observation there. But you asked about cities more generally. I mean, I think the cities that very often get highlighted when talking about what's been going on in terms of big improvements for cycling. So Paris tends to be at the top of everybody's list with the very, very bold things that have happened there over the years. And it's really nothing short of phenomenal what's happened there. I mean, something that struck me was in the re-election campaign for the mayor, Anne Hidalgo, she announced during the campaign that she was going to eliminate a further 60,000 car parking spaces in Paris, and she got re-elected anyway. I mean, it shows that the backlash for those things, which is often cited as a deterrent for politicians, let's say, to put more cycling infrastructure and things in, doesn't necessarily have to be a deal killer. I think Brussels is also a really good example. I mean, for decades, that was a city for cars and a textbook example of how not to do stuff for cyclists and pedestrians. And in 2018-19, candidates from the Green Party were elected, and since then have been able to implement some of their plans for a better quality of life, frankly, is how they've phrased it. So their Good Move mobility plan, which places a priority on pedestrians, cyclists, and public transport and low traffic neighborhoods and those things, was very much in the beginning stage when the pandemic started. And the pandemic was really an accelerator for that. The transport minister for the Brussels capital region, Elke van den Brandt, was able to do all of that quickly because of the mobility plan. They knew where to put the temporary lanes, but also they were badged as test infrastructure, so they could very quickly be rolled out. And they measured that the number of cyclists after these measures increased by 64% in 2020 and a further increase in 2021. And these lanes are gradually being made permanent. And this is a change, you know, me living in Brussels, I see happen before my very eyes, which is, you know, there's still a long way to go, but that's also nothing short of impressive.
Jill, in conclusion, as somebody who leaves the office and lives that experience, are you finding it easier, more enjoyable to navigate your home city of Brussels on your bicycle?
Absolutely. Like I said, there's still a long way to go. It is not a city like Amsterdam or Copenhagen or these cities that just have state-of-the-art protected cycling infrastructure and that whole cycling culture around it. But when I compare it to when I first moved to Brussels, the transformation has been absolutely phenomenal.
Jill Warren, CEO of the European Cyclist Federation, thank you so much for joining us. As we've just heard, there are many cities across Europe who have recently begun the transformation to reprioritise what their streets are used for. And in recent years, there aren't many more ambitious plans than those coming out of Paris. The city's mayor, Anne Hidalgo, has been an incredible advocate for cycling in her city, kicking into gear Plan Velo in 2015, which added hundreds of kilometres of cycleways in its first 5 years. Plan Velo Act 2, running from 2021 to 2026, aims to add another 130 kilometres, that's 80 miles, of bike-safe pathways, as well as teaching children to ride bikes in schools, adding repair shops to each district, and encouraging cycling tourism. Earlier, Monocle's Josh Fenner was joined by Jean-Sébastien Cattier, president of Paris en Selle, a citizens' lobby advocating for a bigger place for cycling within Paris and the greater Paris area. Josh began by asking what it is that Paris en Selle is trying to achieve in the capital.
Paris en Selle is an organization that started 5 or 6 years ago. We are kind of a citizen lobby. We are advocating for more bike and more cyclists in the greater Paris area. So we have about 2,000 members. And on a daily basis, we talk to elected officials and anyone that can influence the bike policy in Paris so that they can build infrastructures and do everything they can so that we have more cyclists. We work for the future of the city, meaning we are defending the cyclists that we have today in Paris, but we are also working so that there are more cyclists tomorrow and that every kid, every senior citizen can use its bike in Paris in the future.
And Jean-Sébastien, the case for cycling in cities seems to me to be completely overwhelming. It's good for people's health. Sometimes it reduces the journey time. It's great for the quality of the air. What opposition are you facing? Is it the infrastructure? Is it people's attitudes? Is it people in office? What are the problems with making this message really stick?
You're right about the benefits. I always say that cycling is good for the one who is using the bike, for his health, for the wallet. It's also great for people not using bikes, for the quality of the life, of the streets, the reducing of noises and pollution and so on. There are two main issues in Paris when we are talking about developing the bike in Paris. One is probably very common to all big cities in the world, meaning we have to transition from a city built or rebuilt for cars into something where cars have a limited space and therefore there are a lot of habits that needs to be changed and a lot of people that need to switch from using their car on a daily basis to use the train or to use a bike for short moves. And this is something that can happen not in 1 year, but over a certain period of time. This is very common, I think, in every city to limit the space for the cars. And the other one is probably more specific to Paris, which is a very old and ancient city with a lot of historical architecture and so on, which limits the way we can remodel or rebuild the city. And therefore, when we talk about building bike lanes and path and so on, there are usually a very complex work to fit everyone into a very limited space that we cannot expand very easily.
Yeah, I think space is a great point. All those parked cars, all the room made to accommodate them moving down the roads as well. Paris-en-Seine is your scheme, but there's a broader scheme in Paris, I understand, Plan Vélo, that moves the city more in the direction of bikeability. Could you tell us a little bit about that and what it's achieved so far, how it's come up against the challenges that you've just outlined there?
Well, the Plan Vélo is something we advocated for and that we helped the city work on before the elections and after the elections, so that there is a plan to build infrastructures all across the city of Paris, so that there is a network of bike lanes everywhere, so that we can go from one point in Paris to another one and be sure we have a protected way as a cyclist to do that. They announced €250 million over the five next years, which is great considering the situation, the economic situation for the cities right now. And the plan is to build bike lanes wherever there is none at this time to make sure that we have a network of cycling infrastructure all over the city.
And if you'll forgive my pun, transport is a bit of a two-way street. Not everyone can always take a bike. Perhaps they have children, perhaps they don't feel safe, as you say. Perhaps people have limited mobility in some other way, or perhaps the journey is too far. How important is it to be a little bit pragmatic about the journeys that can be made on bike and really integrating it with other forms of transport? How have you thought about that? And is there a little bit of wiggle room for people to use other methods of transportation?
When we talk about Paris, one thing to keep in mind is that already as of today in Paris, half of the journeys are made by foot, because Paris is a very walkable city with very short distances for a lot of equipment, public services and so on. So half of the journeys are made by foot and a quarter of them are made by public transit, because we have a very strong network of underground and buses and so on. So there are already a lot of journeys that can be done by other means than the car and that are done by these means as of today. And so the goal and the problem that the city is working on is to change the balance of the use of the public space, meaning today we have 10% of the journeys that are made by cars, but cars use 50% of the public space, meaning the streets and the sideways and so on. So the work to be done is to change this balance and to give more room for bikes and a bit for buses and, of course, for people walking on the side. And this way, we can offer more options to everyone, because, of course, not everyone can use its bike. But the goal is to make people that use their car today to say, OK, you're doing 3 kilometers with your car to go from one point in Paris to another one. You could use another way, another mean to achieve this journey. And therefore, you can use the bus, you can use the metro, you can use your bike. Up to you, but stop using your car. And this is what the plan is aiming at, is to say, okay, there is not enough room so that everyone can use its car. Therefore, let's make some room for other means, because today people don't use their bike because they're afraid of using it in the middle of a lot of cars or on highways and so on. And once we have this network of bike lanes, people can say, okay, know that there is a way to go from this point in a secured and protected way, I can take my bike and can do it.
I just wanted to ask you about some of the hardware that comes with cycling as well. Clearly, there need to be spaces to store them. There need to be perhaps even cycle repair shops in more places. How have you thought about the kind of infrastructure of cycling and the services that an increased number of cyclists may need on the streets of Paris?
You're right about the need for parking the bike, which is a very huge issue for a lot of people to park their bike at home or at the office or at school in a secured way to avoid your bike being stolen. And this is a big problem in Paris and probably in a lot of other cities. And therefore, we also advocate and work to get more secured parking for bikes in every high school, in every, I don't know, swimming pool or everywhere where it's needed and useful for the cyclists, because this is a great way to encourage people to use their bikes and to make sure they have no limit, no restriction to use their bike for every journey they want to do. In Paris, we also have a few major train stations where we try to get some big bike parkings so that people can go to the station with their bike and take the train or the other way around. And also in the suburbs to make sure that everyone can go to the train station with their bike, leave it there, take the train, and then do what they have to do. And this is a very big way to help people to use their bike more.
And Jean-Sébastien, the clue is probably in the name, that Paris en Selle is about the city that you live in. But I wonder if you take any inspiration from other cities, be they in Europe, be they elsewhere, where you think they've got good cycling systems and a good culture that you can kind of aspire to. Where's the best place to cycle?
I think that probably the Netherlands are the best way and the best inspiration we can have about cycling, because they've got like 40 years in advance compared to what we do today in Paris or in London. And they've thought about what's the best infrastructure that can be built, how you can manage this flow of cyclists versus this flow of cars and so on. And this is a very great inspiration for us and probably one of the best places to cycle. But we also have inspiration from the cycle superhighways that were built in London, because the way it's planned, the way it's marketed is also a great way to put a message out to the public to say, okay, we need cycle infrastructure. This is one way to do it. It looks like a train network or a highways network, so people can relate to that and understand why it's useful, how it can work. And this is also a great inspiration for us in Paris to say, okay, how can we advocate and explain to the general public why we need bike infrastructure?
Jean-Sébastien Cattier, president of Paris en Selle, in conversation there with Monocle's Josh Fennett. It can't be a coincidence that both our guests so far have heralded Copenhagen as the master when it comes to getting urban cycling right. So it's only fitting that we end the show in the Danish capital. Copenhagenize is a design consultancy that helps cities, regions, and even private developers to turn their patch into a cycling mecca. Be it city-wide cycling strategies, to the actual street design of an area, or even communication strategies. They also publish the Copenhagenize Index, a ranking of the most bicycle-friendly cities in the world. Earlier, Monocle's Carlotta Ribello was joined by James Tom, who's the director of Copenhagenize Design Co. She started by asking James if he felt that there's been an uptick recently in cycling as a means of transport across Europe and beyond too.
Yes, absolutely. We've seen a lot of cities make strides in the past decade. There's still a lot of work to be done, of course. I'm not saying that it's a bicycle-friendly continent now by any means, but there have been some really, really encouraging and inspiring movements across Europe. Also here in Copenhagen, I mean, people tend to think that, you know, the Danes have always been bicycle lovers, but that's not necessarily the case. Copenhagen, you know, just 50 years ago was prioritizing the automobile as the way of the future, and nearly all cycling infrastructure was taken out. So actually, over the past decades, it's been a struggle for Copenhagen, and it's been a goal for Copenhagen to make cycling more accessible and more attractive to residents. And they have been increasingly building more and more infrastructure, wider bicycle lanes, new bicycle bridges connecting different neighborhoods within the city, traversing over railway lines and the harbor and canals. And now the city is at a point where 49% of the population choose the bicycle to travel to work or school on any given day.
It's interesting hearing you there talk about your city, because in the course of this show, when we've asked our other guests to give examples of, you know, the cities that they look up to, of course, Copenhagen comes almost always at number one. So hearing your take there, it is very interesting. We need to remember that Copenhagen didn't start as this cycling mecca that it is today. Why do you think it then continues to be the master when it comes to mobility on two wheels?
Primarily because of very ambitious targets, including to be carbon neutral in a relatively short time frame. So they've identified transportation as one of the quick and easy wins. Well, easy is a bit of a stretch, but by focusing on the bicycle, they have been able to make great strides in terms of having the population, having residents choose the bicycle on a daily basis. And that's what it's really been about. It's been about making the right choice the easy choice.
Now, one of the other things I wanted to speak to you about is about the Copenhagenized Index, which, from what I can understand, is, you know, this ranking of the more bicycle-friendly cities on Earth. I'm curious, what do you look for when putting the index together, and where did the idea come from?
Yeah, so the index, as you mentioned, we rank and publish the top 20 most bicycle-friendly cities in the world, but we actually research over 100 cities, and we look to a wide range of factors, whether they're qualitative or quantitative, and then apply a score within each factor. So, you know, parameters such as modal share, the percentage of trips to work or school by bicycle, is one indicator. Another one could be political will, looking at how serious cycling as transportation is taken within political discussions, or maybe the portrayal of cycling in everyday imagery or official imagery, looking at government publications and looking in the media to see how the bicycle is represented, whether it's, you know, something for middle-aged men in Lycra or whether it's something for people of all ages and all abilities. And then so we add up all these parameters, then we rank the cities from 1 to 135 and then publish the top 20. And what's great about the index for me actually is, you know, of course, at the top of the list, you're going to have these Northern European cities, Dutch cities, Danish cities that are taking the top couple spots. But what's really inspiring is to see cities like Bogota, cities like Montreal, like Vancouver, that are shooting up into the top 20 within the past years. And that's sort of a testament to how cycling infrastructure can be built relatively quickly and relatively affordably compared to all other transportation infrastructure.
And James, just finally, we've, of course, spoken wonders about Copenhagen. So I'm curious if you have a favorite city other than Copenhagen to cycle in, or other cities that you get inspiration from, perhaps.
Favorite city? That's a tough one, actually. My wife and I were just talking last night about if we could hypothetically move to another city, where would it be? I do have to say that we're quite happy here in Copenhagen. But some cities that came up on the list were Montreal. That's a wonderful city. It's a great city to cycle in. It's also a wonderful cultural city, but also, of course, Paris. You know, you can't ignore the strides Paris has made in the past, even 5 years to a decade, in terms of making cycling a more safer, more comfortable choice. So I think Montreal and Paris are very admirable cities and very inspiring cities to look to for inspiration as well.
That was James Tom of Copenhagenized Design Co. speaking to Monocle's Carlotta Ribello. And that's all for this edition of The Urbanist. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts for your weekly dose of urbanism every Thursday, as well as our weekly sister show, Tall Stories, premiering every Monday. Today's episode was produced by Carlotta Ribello and David Stevens, and David also edited the show. And to play you out this week, well, here's Marcos Valle with Bicicleta. Thank you for listening, city lovers. Sabido